Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Relatively Happy by Whitney Dineen, narrated by Madeline Rozek. Prologue. I've dreamed about the county fair for as long as I can remember. I've been to every single one since the year I was born. I started out in my mom's arms, then moved to a stroller, before graduating to my dad's shoulders, affording me a view like none other. When I was old enough to go with my friends, it was just one great big cotton candy eating, tilt-a-whirl riding, tractor-pulling adventure. Walking behind two little blonde girls, my heart is full of love for them as they busily whisper secrets to one another. They're wearing typical kid clothes, shorts, tank tops, and flip-flops. The one on the right has a sort of wild excitement emanating from her. Her hair, which looks like it hasn't been brushed in a couple of days, adds to the feeling that she marches to the beat of a different drummer. She leans in and tells her friend, "When we grow up, I'm going to come here every single day the fair is open, and I'm going to eat nothing but corn dogs and elephant ears." The other little girl laughs and says, "I've got $5 in my pocket, and I'm going to spend every last penny on the ring toss, so I can finally win that giant stuffed octopus." I walk behind these two cuties for quite a while, enjoying their youthful energy and anticipation. Once they hit the arcade, we go our separate ways. They're going to stay there until they win 7 goldfish between them, and an assortment of junky plastic toys, 1 pair of giant clown-like sunglasses, and a foot-long super soaker squirt gun. No stuffed animals, but neither is going to care. The one with the nicely braided hair is going to grow up and move to New York City and run a successful party planning business. Then she's going to come home for Thanksgiving one year and fall for her high school boyfriend all over again. She'll move back to our hometown as much for herself as for him. The more rumpled girl is going to stay in Gelson and take over her family farm. She's going to keep the same fashion sense, shorts, tank tops, and flip-flops, although she'll grow into those gangly legs and she'll eventually brush her hair every day. Her devil-may-care attitude will only get bigger with age. How do I know this? I'm the little girl with the messy hair and the corn dog fetish. I revisit the fair all the time in my dreams. Though not exactly lucid dreaming, I have come to understand that when I see my spirit guide, Taraz, she's planning to use my memories in dreams to bring me messages. I'm never sure what age I'll be when I get here, but between her guidance and the sounds of happy people, the smell of fried delicacies and the blur of activity, I feel the thrill just as much as I did when I came here as a kid. I see Taraz waiting for me next to my favorite ride, and I join her. "Hey, T, what do you have for me tonight?" "Let's get on, and I'll tell you." Taraz comes in all kinds of forms. Sometimes she's a bright light. Sometimes she's an animal. She's even been a seashell before. Tonight, she's a dolphin. You'd think she'd be totally out of place at the Illinois Ford County Fair hopping around on a dolphin tail, but no one seems to notice. That's the beauty of dreams. Anything goes. Once we get on the carousel, she points to an animal on the ride and says, "Go sit on the black bear's back and we'll talk." I follow her instructions, but as I near the bear, I realize it's real, not plastic or wood, or even a stuffed animal. It looks down at me and briefly bares its teeth before turning away. I look at Taraz to make sure I'm really supposed to sit on him, but she just motions with her flipper for me to do as I'm told. Taraz says, "I know you love the merry-go-round." "I do," I tell her enthusiastically. "I love the brightly painted animals and the sparkling lights and the happy music. I love everything about it." "But Sarah, you're 32 years old. It's time you graduated to a ride with a height requirement." Why? I demand. I don't think you need to change rides until you're tired of the one you're on.
You've outgrown this ride, Sarah. Come with me.
When the ride comes to a stop, I follow her across the fairgrounds to the roller coaster. Only a handful of people are waiting as we walk right up to the height chart. At 5 feet 7 inches, I tower over the thick black line of the acceptable height requirement measurement sign. I don't know, Taraz. I'm not one for crazy highs and lows. I'm pretty happy going around in circles. She lifts a fin and indicates the back of a man in line, who, if I do say so myself, looks pretty spectacular from behind. He's easily over 6 feet with dark brown hair, and he's built like he bench presses cows in his free time.
It's time to share your life, Sarah. Staying on the same path isn't going to find you that person. Ask the universe. It's time. Go on.
I obediently follow her instructions. I walk over to stand behind the man in line, and my dream ends as I roll over in bed and say, Dear universe, what do you say we blow things open? I know you've got some great things in store for me. Let's start with a boyfriend, shall we? I drift back to sleep with the knowledge that my world is about to change. Chapter 1. Because I'm happy. Before I know it, I'm standing in the dandelion field waiting for the first sign of morning. I reflect on my feelings like I do every day before my sun salutations. The one undeniable truth about me is that I, Sarah Ellen Hastings, am happy. Every molecule of my person wears a smiley face emoji and flashes a big thumbs up. I let the warmth of this thought flow through me before trying to remember everything that happened in my sleep last night. I want to grab the memory before it slips away. With my eyes closed, I see it. Kat and I are at the county fair. We were 9, and it was the first year we were allowed to go off by ourselves. I ate 3 corn dogs and remember feeling nauseated the whole next day. But it was so worth it. Taraz was there with a message. Something about a man. I've been too busy to acknowledge the dating deficit in my life, but I realize a relationship would be nice. Oh, yep, there it is. She had me ask the universe. Excellent. I know once that happens, it's only a matter of time. The first time Taraz came to me, I was 12 years old. She was in human form that time, probably so as not to scare me away. At any rate, I didn't believe her when she told me she was my spirit guide. Prove it, I said. She'd asked, What would it take for you to believe me? I thought long and hard about what I wanted and was about to tell her she needed to turn a pumpkin into a stagecoach. But then I thought I should have her do something useful, so I said, I want to win the lottery. She shrugged her shoulders. Fine. But just this once. You have to ask the universe as well. How do I do that? I asked. Just say, Dear Universe, I'd like to win the lottery. You might also want to add that this is the only time you'll take advantage of this privilege for something as trivial as personal gain, when you clearly don't need it. When I woke up, I was filled with a sensation that Taraz was not only real, but that she was going to come through with a win. I had told my folks I was going to win the lottery that day, and they laughed at my overconfidence. My dad had said,
Sarah Bear, hardly anyone ever wins the lottery, and when they do, they sure as heck don't expect it.
Then why do they play? I had demanded.
For the fantasy.
That's silly. Why would you waste a dollar on something you didn't expect to have happen? I'm not playing for some dream. I'm playing for victory. Plus, I knew if I really won, my whole life would change for the better. I figured a spirit guide was just another name for a fairy godmother.
standing in line at the gas station, Dad had asked,
"How many tickets do you want me to buy for you?"
"Just one." He'd laughed again.
"Clearly, this is a lesson you're going to have to learn the hard way. Although it won't be that hard, being that you're only investing a dollar."
I remember rolling my eyes in a neat 360, a maneuver that only a preteen can manage without doing permanent bodily damage, and saying, "You don't have to believe me, Dad, because I know I'm going to win." And I did. Not the $24 million I was expecting, but back in the late 90s, $8,000 wasn't anything to sneeze at. Heck, I'd take $8,000 any day of the week. I had put most of the money in the bank, but kept $1,000 out to blow on things like a new rabbit hutch, a swing for my chickens, and a gorgeous cowbell for Adelaide, my favorite cow. Oh, and I went to Claire's Boutique and got my eyebrow pierced. Watch out, this farm girl has an edge. Obviously, the biggest thing to come out of that experience was confidence in Taraz. Every time she's come to me after that, I've believed her implicitly. She also said something else last night about my world changing. Something about getting off the merry-go-round and being ready for the roller coaster. I'm not sure what that was all about. I just know that if she came to tell me, then it was real. I also know she's going to deliver on a boyfriend, and I'm super excited about that. Chapter 2. The Snowbirds Are Coming. I see the sun beginning to peek above the horizon as Scotty Schweer runs my way, calling, "Wait for me!" He's hopping and skipping and jumping the whole way as bits of sharp grass and ground poke at him. I keep telling him he doesn't have to take his shoes off until he gets out here. But he leaves his yurt barefoot every morning. The direct contact with the earth is essential for ridding the body of pain, as well as energizing it. Although it's less painful if you wear your shoes until you're in a soft place. Scotty arrives at the exact moment the first whisper of pink appears on the horizon, bidding the darkness adieu. My body erupts in chills of gratitude and anticipation.
Is it just me, or is morning arriving earlier and earlier?
He demands, while getting into position and releasing a giant yawn. I ignore him as I try to concentrate on my sun salutation and not the fact that I've got to pee. I overslept by 32 minutes. Because I was having the most delicious dream about a man I saw in the roller coaster line. It was so good I didn't want to wake up. As a result, I didn't have time to use the facilities before running out to the east field and getting into my current position. Missing the first glimpse of a new day simply isn't an option. I inhale deeply, move my hands from prayer position to high above my head, and arch my back slightly. Tingles of electricity radiate from my scalp straight to the tips of my toes. Pure radiance rushes through me as my chakras gain full alignment. Perfect physical and spiritual balance are achieved. If only it didn't feel like the Clydesdales were performing river dance on my bladder. On the exhale, I bend forward, resting my forehead on my knees and placing my hands on either side of my feet, releasing any negativity that might have crept in during the night.
"Did you smell that skunk last night? Woo-wee, that was a powerful stink."
I've recently discovered that Scotty is super chatty in the morning. "Stop talking, Scotty. I'm becoming one with the universe," I shush him. I lunge into plank position and stick my pose. This is followed by an upward dog, one of my all-time favorite poses. With my body flush to the ground, I feel the strength of the earth fortifying my core. Pushing up on my elbows causes the most sublime stretch down my spine. Then I lift my bum up to the sun, sliding straight into downward dog. One more backwards lunge, followed by hands straight up. And I'm back into mountain pose,
With the completion of my son's salutation, I know the world is my oyster. Another pearl of a day is upon me.
I wonder why skunks have to smell so bad. You'd think there was another way to protect themselves. Take porcupines. Nothing says back off like a bunch of poisonous quills shooting at you.
I tell him, they're not poisonous. They have barbs that make them super hard to get out.
He releases a full-body shiver.
Either God has a wicked sense of humor, or he's out to get us.
Ignoring his train of thought, I ask, what do you have on your agenda today?
Nothing much. I have to...
He makes air quotes and says,
apply for some jobs I might be right for so I can collect my unemployment check.
And then he returns to his normal self. But other than that, I'm going to chill. The advertising company Scotty worked for just went belly up. He's decided to take a break from city life, sublet his apartment, and come back home for the summer. He's staying with me so I can help him regain emotional balance.
How about you? Saving the planet, one mortal at a time? Or do you have something less daunting on your agenda?
I'd like to spend another 20 minutes out here and go through a few more poses, but I really need to pee. So first I'll take care of that, and then I've got deliveries to make, I say. See you at dinner?
I'll be there,
he assures me enthusiastically. Scotty's only been here for a week, but it's been nice to have the regular company. We've known each other since we were kids, so it's almost like having a little brother stay with me. I run through the back door of my farmhouse and immediately hear a macaw chirp. Mom's calling. Hello? I grab the phone on the way to the powder room.
Sweetheart, it's Mom. How are you this morning?
I'm wonderful. Why are you calling so early? My parents spend most of the year in Florida, preferring the sun and fresh citrus fruit to the biting cold of a central Illinois winter. And spring. And often fall, come to think of it. My dad, who's 83, has rheumatoid arthritis and claims the heat is the best thing for his pain. He's an old-school farm boy who doesn't much go in for naturopathy. He's of the generation that happily takes a multitude of pills for whatever ails him, but is very skeptical when I suggest a completely natural plant-based cure.
It's 6:48 here, dear. I've been up for an hour.
But you never call before noon, I reply as I sit on the toilet and experience sweet relief. I wanted to give you as much notice as possible.
Pause.
Dad and I are coming back early. My parents never leave Florida before the 4th of July, and since it's only May, this revelation causes me a bit of concern.
When will you be here?
2 weeks from today. I'll email you the details so you can pick us up at the airport.
Why are you coming home so soon?
We miss you and want to spend more time with you, she adds. I hope this won't cause any trouble with business. I've taken over the family farm and am here alone 9 months out of the year while my parents snowbird in Florida. I supply organic fruits and vegetables to 20 restaurants between our place in central Illinois and Chicago. I also have a farm stand, gift shop, and several yurts, one currently inhabited by Scotty, on the property that I rent out to people looking to get back to nature, many of whom experience health issues who come to me to detoxify the pollutants from their bodies. Needless to say, I stay pretty busy.
You won't cause any trouble. In fact, you'll be here for the opening of Eat Me.
That's with an exclamation point, because, you know, I really mean it. I've turned one of the yurts on the property into a vegan cafe. We're going to serve breakfast and lunch to my guests, and any locals brave enough to eat an animal-free meal. I'm not sure how busy it'll be, since most people in our neck of the woods expect meat served every time they open their mouths. I take it as a challenge to help them expand their boundaries and plan on doing so with tasty dishes like garbanzo bean cutlets, cashew sour cream, and cocoa nib brownies. Yum!
though I have a terrible weakness for certain meats myself, which started with my love of corn dogs, I managed to maintain about a 96.5% vegetarian diet. Of course, I don't let anyone else know that, or I'd lose my street cred. A girl should practice what she preaches, right? I don't mean to cut you short, dear, Mom says, but I really need to take a shower before my hair and nail appointment. Then I'm going to Publix to pick up some ground beef. I promised your dad a taco casserole for dinner tonight. My stomach involuntarily rumbles in response. Taco casserole was my favorite Tuesday night mainstay from childhood. Apparently, it's still going strong. Love you, Mom. Can't wait to see you, I say, but she's already hung up the phone. My parents were older when they had me. Dad was 51 and my mom was 39. As a later-in-life match, they weren't expecting to have a family. My surprise entrance into the world kept them from the boring existence they would have had to endure without me. See previous note about Taco Tuesday. I remind them of their good fortune regularly. Dad had a whole other family before Mom and me. He was married for 20 years to a lady named Jeannie, and they had two daughters together, Naomi and Caroline. My sisters were 12 and 14 when they died in a car crash with their mom. They would have been 54 and 56 if they were still alive today. Strangely, I've never thought of myself as an only child, even though I grew up without siblings in physical form. My mind travels back to my parents' early arrival. Being they're such creatures of habit, it makes zero sense that they're coming home early just because they miss me. Worry niggles in my brain. I wonder if something bigger is afoot. It's not even 6, so I decide to go back out to the pasture and spend a few minutes in bird-of-paradise pose. Not only will it massage my internal organs, facilitating proper digestion, it'll also help focus my mind. My record is 3 minutes, but my goal is to be able to hold it for 5. Today could be my lucky day. As I point my toe toward the sky and wrap my arms around my thigh to support it, I breathe in the early summer air. The sun has begun to warm the plants, releasing their unique fragrances. Its beams reach into my heart and fill me with contentment. Life is so darn good. I can't imagine anything upsetting this tranquility. Chapter 3: Land Opportunities and Faith. It's 10:30 and I'm in the herb greenhouse when I hear, "Sarah!" I hear Ethan before I see him. "Sarah!" My childhood BFF's ex-fiancé screeches to a halt mere inches from me. He's panting like he just ran a 3-minute mile and is more excited than I've ever seen him. I continue to cut and wrap Thai basil for today's restaurant deliveries. "What in the world has gotten into you?" I ask, because Ethan is a very staid individual, not one prone to great bursts of excitement. "My mom called. My apartment in New York City sold. I'm officially homeless. Isn't that great?" Ethan's been living here for several months, so I can help him explore his recent diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. He's super high-functioning and extremely intelligent, as many ASD people are. Yet his diagnosis forced him to confront his differences and make some decisions about how he wants to live his life. He decided to get out of the hustle and bustle of the Big Apple to try something calmer. "Congratulations! Does that mean you've decided to stay in Gelson?" He shifts uncomfortably from foot to foot, adding a little toe tap as he goes. "I don't know. I mean, I'd like to. I feel comfortable here, but I need to talk to Catriona first. I don't want her to feel like I'm intruding on her new life." Kat and Ethan were a couple for 2 years in New York City before they drifted apart. Part of the divide was due to Ethan's rigidity. The other was a result of Kat never fully getting over her first love, our old classmate Sam Hawking. When Kat brought Ethan home last Thanksgiving to meet her family, it all exploded. She returned home shortly after.
I think she'll be delighted. She truly wants the best for you.
He shrugs his shoulders and tilts his head.
She's a good friend. I just don't want it to be uncomfortable for her.
Kat and Ethan are one of those rare couples who made the transition from life partners to friends with little drama. While it's strange to think of them both leaving the Big Apple to live in our tiny hole-in-the-wall town in central Illinois, if anyone can pull it off, they can. Let me know how it goes. I'd be more than happy to help you look for a place in town.
Ethan's reached the point where he's ready for his own space. I've gone as far as I can with him. He's been living a clean lifestyle for the better part of 5 months. With a steady schedule of guided meditations, sweat lodging, and yoga, he's about as deprogrammed as he'll ever be. Ethan hands me a large priority mail envelope.
This was delivered for you. I signed for it. I hope that's okay.
Setting my clippers on the greenhouse table, I wonder who the heck sent me something that requires a signature. I hope I'm not getting sued or anything.
Ethan watches closely as I rip open the back tab on the envelope and pull out a sheet of paper on a legal letterhead. To Sarah Hastings. The Greers' 220-acre property next door to yours has been vacant for 6 years since the passing of Herman Greer. The family has decided to proceed with its sale and offers you the first opportunity at ownership.
Blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. It's more money than I could possibly hope to swing, so I crumple up the letter without finishing it.
Ethan raises his eyebrows in question. The neighboring farm is for sale, and their family trust is giving me first crack at buying it.
Wouldn't that be a great opportunity for you? He asks.
Yes, but the cost is prohibitive. Plus, I'm as busy as I can handle. Now isn't the right time to consider expanding my operation, especially if I'm trying to free up time to have a social life.
I see. Shoving his hands deep into his jeans pockets, he adds, I'm going to drive over to Catriona's then and see if she's available to talk. Do you need me to pick up anything in town while I'm out?
Ethan and I didn't start out on great footing, but he's turned into a real doll. While he definitely marches to his own tune, he's proven to be very hardworking and thoughtful, two essential qualities in my book.
Would you mind stopping at the pharmacy to see if my new book has arrived?
I recently joined a book club along with Kat's grandmother Nan, Dorcas Abernathy, the retired Presbyterian minister's wife, and Emily Rickle, the gal who runs the cafeteria at the hospital, and soon-to-be caterer for Kat's event business she's running out of her family barn. It's a very cool party venue.
Sure, what's the name of it?
I think it's called The Laird's Unsoiled Lover, or something like that. Ask Mrs. Fleming, she's holding a copy for me. Our sole reading material subject is erotic historical Scottish romances. You'd think we'd run out of books, but apparently this genre is chock-a-block full of authors, with new ones publishing daily. While it wouldn't be my genre of choice, I find the steamy romance angle makes up for the rather alarming deficiency in my own social life. However, I like to imagine they had toothbrushes back then, making sure all those heated encounters were minty fresh. Ethan doesn't blink when I tell him the name of the book. He's aware of Nan's penchant for trashy novels.
Anything from the IGA? I thought I'd stop and see if they got in the vegan ice cream I asked them to order.
No thanks. I'm driving to Chicago to deliver produce. If your ice cream doesn't come in, let me know. I can make a stop in the city. Ethan nods before turning around and marching off like a fully wound toy soldier. I hurry to finish loading up my pickup with today's deliveries. I want to be back on the road to Gelson by 3 to avoid as much rush hour traffic as possible. Once I settle into the cab, sipping my stinging nettle tea, I turn on my favorite Pandora station. Stevie Wonder and Ariana Grande blast out Faith, and I bop along with my usual undeterred optimism. Certain the day ahead will be full of gorgeous men and...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?